Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is the Frey Podcast, brought to you by thefrey.com, a place for women who want more from life.
This is what I want, this is what I need. If you don't have to go, I can set you free. Are you gonna make a move? Are you gonna come and see? Whatever you wanna do, you know it's cool with me.
Today's podcast is a conversation. It's advice, it's theorizing, it's offering unqualified often, but solicited advice or guidance to people who have submitted anonymous scenarios, life situations, questions, that sort of thing. I have my lovely girlfriend Rachel joining me for this episode. She has done an episode with me in the past and she is back again for round two. Rachel and I have been friends for 20 years now. We've been through a lot of different seasons together. We met in high school. We did schoolies together. We did our partying years together. We have definitely had our fair share of Long Island iced teas, hangovers, and regrets. But we are now very grown up, very mature mums. Rachel has two beautiful daughters. She has a beautiful husband. They're just a gorgeous, gorgeous family inside and out. And I do truly value Rachel's insight and her opinions and just her willingness to sit down and have a chat about these topics. So we answer a variety of questions, as I said, unqualified but solicited. We talk about body image when pregnant. We talk about self-esteem. We also chat about how difficult it can be when there's some disharmony amongst your inherited extended family, in particular a sister-in-law, and a few more topics as well. So I really hope that you enjoy this episode with Rach. Strap in. It's a long one. We digress at different times. We do talk a bit about our true crime interests at the moment as well. But without any further preamble, let's get in to today's episode. I figured I better hit record because we've already been chatting for a little while. But Rach, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, I'm so glad to be back.
It's so nice to have you back. And if only the listeners could see us now.
I mean, we've got quite a look going on.
We both are just very stylish right now.
To give you some context, I feel really run down. I think just this time of year, everyone goes a bit nuts. It's like all of the Scorpio seasons in my, like all of the Scorpios in my life have their birthdays. And I have I have Zavirax on the sides of my face. I went to the doctor on Tuesday, got swollen glands. I just feel, just finished
so
a workout.
Good.
I am gorgeous.
And it's funny because you sent me a text message saying, I'm logging in, don't judge my look. Meanwhile, we've known each other for like 20 years and we never would. We've seen each other in all states, mind you. Mm-hmm. We did schoolies together. We've seen each other in all states.
We've seen each other at rock bottom.
We've been through it, haven't we? And I said to her, I'm in my pajamas. I've just got fresh fake tan on. I've tinted my eyebrows, so I'm looking a bit like aggro. I haven't washed my hair in 7 days. It's
gorge. I mean,
it is.
If only the boys that turned us down could see us now.
There are a few of those over the years. I'm choking. Oh my gosh, I'm literally choking. You know, when you get a cough and then the more you like mentally don't cough, the worse it gets. Anyway, now that we've let everyone know about how beautiful we look right now, thank you again for carving some time out to join me again for another episode where we dole out some unqualified but solicited advice. We're answering or talking about different life scenarios or questions that some of our listeners have submitted anonymously. But before we get into those anonymous submissions, do you have a recommendation for our listeners, whether it's a show, a song, a playlist, a podcast that you're loving, just a good old-fashioned rec?
Well, I don't know. I hope this reaches all of the market because my taste is very dark, and I'm sorry if you want something lighthearted, you've come to the wrong gal because I go on very dark places in Netflix, and my Netflix recommendations, like, it's troublesome. I think if someone walked into my house, they'd be like, is everything okay at home? It's crazy. So
do you have to remember to change to the kids setting when you log out?
Yeah, because I don't think my daughter wants to watch anything about Dharma, you know, the serial killer. So I've just started that. It's very gory, so I can't. I put a pause on that. I've just finished The Girl in the Picture, which is like a dark.
Oh, that's a true crime.
Yes, it's all about finding out who this girl is, why she's traveling with this older guy, what the vibe is, and it is so dark. And I bawled my eyes out at the end because there's like a big plot twist, and it's horrible. So. It makes you hug your babies, I think. But so if true crime is your bag, I'm your girl. But if you want lighthearted, fun comedy, nope.
You won't find that here.
Yeah. I'm at the moment, I just finished Girl in the Picture, which was heavy. And now I've started I Am a Stalker.
We started to watch that, and I think we watched about 10 minutes of it, and then it turned quite, you know, I thought it was going to be much more about the psychology of stalking, and it probably is, but the first episode, it just went so heavy on domestic violence that this one woman was exposed to, and both Brendan and I just like looked at each other, and we must have been having a funny night because normally, like lately, we've been watching pretty heavy stuff too, but we were both just like, nah, not tonight. Like, we might have to come back to that stalker series.
You almost have to take it on when you're in a really good place in every other aspect of your life. Like, if everything's cool, and you've got to get it at a certain time of the day, because if you start watching that at like 9:30 at night, I can promise you, you're not going to bed because, So my recommendations, I was very intrigued by Girl in the Picture. It's dark, it's heavy. Dharma is very gory, so I can't, I think I'm hitting pause on that, and I'm just I Am a Stalker, but oof.
Started to watch the Dharma one, and it got to like literally 5 minutes into the first episode. Mm-hmm. And I said to Brendan, like, I can't, this is going to have to be one that you watch on your own, because he does watch like a lot of that stuff. He's very into all of that dark stuff.
I think you got to have the mind for it, but I can't listen to it in a podcast. I think hearing people's
the other way
enunciate it makes it worse, and it makes it more real. For some reason I can see it, like, because
visually,
body language, it's a little bit easier to kind of,
take on board. Well, funnily enough, my recommendation is true crime as well. We're just sort of on the same page there, but it is a podcast, and I know you just said that you're not really into true crime podcasts, but this one is different to any other true crime podcast I've personally listened to. It's called The Crime Analyst, and it's hosted by a lady called Laura, and she is just so intelligent, so inspiring, so thoughtful, so considered. She was part of the team at Scotland Yard. She's involved in creating resources and all sorts of training for like stalking, domestic violence. She's just a very like intelligent woman. But the reason I love the Crime Analyst podcast is it's not about listening to crimes as entertainment as such, because she breaks down all of the cases and she talks about where people went wrong in investigating them. And she talks a lot about, you know, like the internalized misogyny within the police force, particularly in like the Gabby Petito case. It's so fascinating, Rach. Like, she goes through all of the recordings and she's like, look, listen to this. This is like the brohood and this is the bro code. And this is like, I don't know, just the way that she looks at things and explains it.
Oh, that does kind of sound like my bag. I'm going to look into that.
Yeah, I'll flick you the link.
I think maybe I've just gone too broad, you know, my search. You know, when you do a Google search, a true crime podcast, I kind of feel like I clicked on the first one and it wasn't it, tried another one, wasn't it. So maybe I've kind of put it in, like, I can't do it. It's too hard.
Well, like case file true crime, that's like very much you're in. Like, it's like storytelling and you're in the crime and it feels like you're there for the entertainment of the story and the thrill of it, which sounds awful. It sounds so awful. But Crime Analyst is much more about being pragmatic and it's zooming out and looking at the crime as a whole and where investigators drop the ball along the way. What are the things to look out for? Understanding coercive control, understanding the more insidious elements of domestic violence especially. So my recommendation is the Crime Analyst podcast, in particular the Gabby Petito series. There are like maybe 15 episodes on it, but it is fascinating.
Oh, I'm gonna look into it. I'm gonna give it another go.
I shall flick you the link. All right, I'm going to bring up some of these questions and we'll just make our way through them.
Loose, see up, hands
out. That's the one. In our pajamas and our cold sore cream, that's what we'll do. God. All right, number one, being guarded with a new partner because of previous experiences and I'm trying hard not to be. Help.
I feel like this is so common because I feel like once you get cheated on, you assume the worst in every other person that comes into your life, because I've been burnt before. History has served that this has happened to me. I think as hard as it is, you're in a new relationship and you need to look at it with a new set of eyes. This person is new to me. This relationship is new. I think you automatically kind of drag old stuff in. That's just, you know, that's experiences, that's situations you've been in. You will bring that into the next relationship. Like, everybody does it. But I think you need to look at it. And I think you need to look at the forest, not at the trees. I think you need to look at, okay, what kind of qualities does this person have that the person I've got out of a relationship with not have? So where are they different? Where are they the same? What is triggering me? So let's use cheating as an example. I was cheated on. This person, the person that I was in a relationship previously, used to hide text messages from me, or like they would go MIA on nights out and that kind of thing. Has that new person doing similar things? Can you then communicate and say, hey, I want to bring up to you, like, this kind of stuff used to happen in my last relationship and it really triggers me. And I know, I'm sure that there's probably nothing happening. I'm sure that I just want to put it on your radar that this is completely overwhelming to me. So I'm feeling like I'm getting all of those past experiences are coming back. I think you need to look at it, new set of eyes, new relationship, new person, but be honest. These are the things that somebody's done to me in the past. This is what, when you do this, it sends me this message, like, you go missing. I can't reach you. That brings out my anxiety. I don't know what's going on. I don't know where I stand with you. I think you just need to be open with them.
Yeah. Communicate a lot. And if you're communicating with a partner that respects you and ultimately wants you to feel safe, even if these are things that they find trivial or bothersome, if a person wants you to feel safe, they will listen to your experience, understand mm-hmm. where you're coming from, and realize that it is reasonable to give you assurance or reassurance, disclaimer, within reason. You know, someone else shouldn't be responsible for calming your nervous system 24/7. But I think in this instance, Rach, that you're talking about with you know, infidelity in the past, and then you're trying to learn to trust someone, being upfront and saying, hey, I really want to get to a place where I feel so secure and I am working on earning that secure attachment. But in order to help me get there, there are going to be times when I might be triggered, and I recognize that I'm being triggered because of something on the surface, but it's bringing something up from my past right up to the surface and it's coming out. I recognize that's my stuff, but so that we can earn secure attachment together, I may need reassurance at times. I also want to say to this listener, being guarded with a new partner because of previous experiences, and I'm trying hard not to be help, like I want to say, it's okay to be guarded. You know, being guarded is all right. Just don't cut yourself off completely. You know, don't let your past hurts keep calling the shots. Like, don't let them be the one, like your past experiences, don't let them be in the driver's seat. Put them in the passenger seat. Eventually you'll put them in the back seat. Eventually you can put them in the boot, then a trailer, and then you can park them somewhere else. But initially, I think it's okay to be guarded. And if you want to try and get to a place where you can drop those defenses or park the trailer, if we're sticking with that analogy, then I would say to try to look up and look forward and focus on what it is that you want. Acknowledge, yes, you've got those pains in your past. Yes, you've had someone do wrong by you. That all exists. That all happened. That's very real. It's reasonable to want to protect yourself. But if you were to look up and out and forward, what is it that you want? And can you focus on that? You know, put your eye on the prize of, you do want secure attachment. You do want connection. So how can you get there little by little?
And that's, I think that's ties into kind of like looking at it from a bigger picture,
yeah,
as opposed to like all of these, like you want, yes, this perfect person to have all of these qualities or whatever it may be. That's a lot of little details. You need to look at it holistically and go, okay, these are the things that I need for me to feel safe. And it's a two-way street. Potentially the person that you're with is bringing in some of their old stuff as well. Okay, so get on the same page. Okay, these are my values. I want honesty, I want trust, and I want open communication, and I want to just understand where you're going on a night out. I don't expect you to give me a play-by-play. I think drawing some expectations from both sides and hearing both sides of the story, because I'm sure that every relationship you start, every new relationship, no matter what it is, it's just new relationships have new problems. You know, it's you still need to work together. And I'm sure that person's probably bringing in some stuff of their own as well. So two-way street of communication will, I think, and it takes time. It's not, you can't trust someone tomorrow. You know, it takes a great relationship takes time, and you peel back, yes, the layers and understand them. Yeah.
And that communication and openness and vulnerability goes towards strengthening and allowing you to eventually drop your defenses. I know with Brendan especially, he would say to me, like, your walls are up so high, which sounds ludicrous now, fast forward like 10 months and we got engaged so fast. But when we first met, I was very much two steps forward, one step back, very scared. And he would say to me, like, you're going to have to drop those defenses at some point. But he could see that it wasn't from a place of not wanting to get to know him. It wasn't from a place of not being fully invested. It was just from a place of, like, far out, my little heart's been through a lot. So I think it's reasonable for the person you're seeing to understand that and to be patient and to build the connection and build the trust and the vulnerability with you, and to just accept that we've all got baggage. Like, we've all got stuff. Number two, I have a problematic sister-in-law. I really want to get along, but I'm so triggered. She's judgmental, makes snide remarks, and has to have everything perfect. Advice, please.
Oh, I
put her in the bin.
Drop her, mate. Drop her. It's tricky because I hate when people do this. Oh, no, I'm in a great situation, so I don't understand. I'm going to put it in a similar context. So I have two sister-in-laws and I love them dearly. But
shout out.
but like anything, it takes time to get to know someone. So, this person does sound kind of toxic anyway. I think it's important to be, especially when you're getting to know someone, you keep a couple of cards to your chest. If you know that this person has always got the best advice, always has to give their two cents, but I would have done it this way, that kind of mentality, I would in the beginning maybe not bait them with information. So they can't give their opinion on something that you haven't asked them, if that makes sense. So you kind of keep a couple of cards close to your chest and keep it very neutral. If there's topics that your sister-in-law believes that she's a subject matter expert in or something like that, I would probably, if it were me, for my own protection, I'd probably keep those topics off the table. You know, they say never talk politics, they never talk religion, never talk vaccinations or health or that kind of thing. If those types of topics are something that your sister-in-law will always chime in about, I probably would scale back. I'm going to put it into the context of work because that's kind of the closest thing I have, that you have to see them all the time. So, you know, like a sister-in-law, you have to see her at family events, you have to see her, she's in your life.
You've inherited this relationship.
Yeah, it's not a relationship that you have gone out and sought after. Mm. So I think you need to look at it like, I'm a big believer in keeping the peace. I think just keep your cards close to your chest, but just be civil. I think there's a lot of worth in the silence sometimes. Silence is, in my opinion, best practice. I wouldn't be baiting her for her opinion. I just kind of would keep my distance.
Withdraw a little bit.
But polite. I think that's a very big thing. I think as things are certainly topics that she loves to talk about or comments or things that you know that she's always going to bring up, I probably would keep them, I would scale them back and I would just...
I think the word polite is a good word, Rach, because I was just having this conversation actually with Brendan today and I was saying, like, I think something that I have learned over the course of a little while is there is so much value in a polite veneer to family, and it's not something that I was aware of in my early 20s as such. Like, I think in my early 20s, I took things more personally. I felt more enraged at certain things that were going on. I felt
escalate, you know?
Yes.
When you've both got an opinion, especially if you're quite boisterous, if you're quite opinionated and so is your sister-in-law, you're going to get into something, you're going to get into it and it's going to get heated. It's not going to be, oh, wow, I see your point of view. Oh, wow, I see your point of view as well. It's not going to be like that. So I think it needs to be polite.
And, I mean, it says, like, I have a problematic sister-in-law. So maybe that's just all it is. You just go, you know what, I've got a sister-in-law who's a bit difficult. We have personality clashes, but it is what it is, because the option of saying, like, severing that relationship and saying to your partner, you know, it's me or your sister, or I'm not going to go to family things, that's not going to end well for anyone, and it's going to add so much tension and so much stress to your life. And whilst it probably adds stress to your life that, you know, she makes judgmental remarks or she's snide and she puts a lot of perfectionism tendencies on you, like, that's stressful. But I promise you, it's much more stressful if it ends up in, like, some sort of, you know, family divide where you feel like you've had to be in the middle of pitting your partner against his sister because she's always going to be there. She's always going to be in the picture. And I think a lot of it comes back to just going, you know what? That's a them problem, not a me problem. That's a her problem, not a me problem. And if she's nasty and she's overstepping your boundaries, that's up to your partner, I think, to step in and be the one to draw a boundary and be like, hey, this is my wife, this is my girlfriend, this is my husband, this is my boyfriend, whatever it is. You know, we need to actually make sure there's a level of respect. This is going to be a boundary for us. We love you, but this is a boundary. I think it's on the partner to sort of protect you if it's at that point where you feel like it's really impacting can you hear Lou? Oh my god, I'm gonna get that dog some booties. Come on Lou, sit down. If it's really impacting like your mental health or impacting how much time you want to spend with the family, I think it's valuable to have an open and honest conversation with your partner and see how they feel about it. But honestly, I think the cost of conflict in the family, like the extended family unit, is a big one. It's a big cost.
I was going to say something very similar, that I think it needs to be a two-way street. So if your sister-in-law is completely overstepping the mark and is making a situation very uncomfortable, I think your partner kind of, in a way, you don't want to bring them into the, you don't want them to be the mediator, but they kind of need to step up and say, hey, that was out of, I'm calling that out, that's out of line. That's out of bounds. We're not talking about that. Like,
yes, because okay. Siblings can do that. A sibling can say anything and it's forgiven eventually.
Yes.
But an outsider that's brought into the family, they don't have the same privilege.
But I think it is a two-way street. If the brother or the partner or the sister also needs to call out if you as the listener is being is also escalating a situation, I think it's then also up to the partner to pull them aside at that event or afterwards and say, hey, I don't know, I think that was kind of out of bounds as well. Like, I think they need to play fair ref. Like, I it can't just be that they hammer down on the sister and say, you need to change all of these things. If there's still some behaviors that perhaps you need to own up to and you need to step in and you need to acknowledge, I think the partner, I'm getting the vibe that it's obviously a brother-sister duo.
Yes, that's what I feel like.
The brother
too
would then also have to do the same thing for the sister, because she could be feeling a similar way. Oh, my sister-in-law's crazy, or whatever it may be. But it just, I think he needs to play both sides. It can't just be that he hammers down on the sister and the wife or the partner or the girlfriend. It then can't be. It's got to be a two-way street.
Yeah. Yes. And then just two more things I would add to that I was thinking about just then. One is when you go to family events, you know, maybe putting on like your invisibility cloak that's impenetrable and you're just like, I'm here, that polite veneer is on, I'm doing this because I love my partner and family is important to my partner, and that's what it takes. Like for 45 minutes, for an hour, for 2 hours, whatever it is, I'm just going to acknowledge she bothers me. That's going to happen, but at the end of this family gathering, I'm leaving. And the second one is to maybe look at your sister-in-law with a little bit of compassion if you can and go, huh, what's going on for her that she feels the need to do that? Can you see the vulnerability in her actions? Extend compassion. And can you also keep in mind that people change? Like, someone can be really difficult. Like, how many stories do you hear of Rach where it's like, oh, we absolutely hated each other at first?
100%.
And then you fall in love, you become best friends, and it's like, you know, sometimes you just can have that little bit of friction while everyone's figuring out their dynamics, or, you know, maybe she's going through something really, really intense and she's kind of being an asshole to people that are close to her. But you know what? Maybe in 2 years, she'll be in a completely different spot in her life and you'll be like, oh my gosh, Susan, remember when you were a real bitch to me at Christmas, but now you're really, you know, you're on really great terms. You know, it doesn't have to be that's how it's always going to be, but that's how it is right now. So what can you do to protect yourself, your energy, and your relationship?
If you've ever worked in a customer service or a customer life, customer facing role, you know that you've got to show up to that shift and you've got to handle whatever comes at you, whatever abuse, whatever price problem that you have, situation that comes at you. You have to kind of let it slide off you. It is very tricky. I can assure you it's tricky when someone is peppering you with their remarks. Like, it's a lot, but I think you kind of need to be the bigger person in the beginning. I think it will pay off dividends. If you escalate the situation, are fighting back, the snide remarks are flinging back and forth, there's no room for growth. You're just going to stay in this toxic situation. And time does wonders for things. Like you said, 2 years from now, you guys could be holidaying together and having margies on the beach. You just don't know it. But look at it at face value now. It's yuck now. Be the bigger person. Put that cloak on that just says, okay, I've got 2 hours. That's, you know, 6 times 15 minutes that I have to deal with her. Then we're good.
Like, I can tell you just finished a workout 6 times 15 minutes. That's just 7 lots of 5 minutes to get through.
5 more reps. It's just 22 more Christmases. It's just.
I like that. Okay, next up.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm really struggling with my self-esteem. Can you share some tangible steps to improve it? What can I do now/every day to actually start feeling confident?
Oh, this, I feel like this is a big question for, I could go into a lot of answers. You know, I feel like there's 700 correct answers to this situation, but I think you've got to kind of break it down piece by piece. So first bit is, what kind of, I think self-esteem or self-confidence also kind of in a way ties into self-worth. Am I worthy of this love? Am I worthy of a promotion? Am I worthy of meeting a right guy?
Yeah, do I deserve it?
Do I deserve a great house? Do I deserve to be looking in this area? Am I worthy of what's out there? So I think in a way you kind of need to look inwards and say, I am worthy of this. I am worthy of change. I'm worthy of great people being in my life. I'm worthy of great relationships with my girlfriends. I'm worthy of a promotion at my work. You know, you've got to trick your mind into thinking that whatever comes your way, whatever great things come your way, you're worthy of them and you deserve them. You've worked hard for it. Let them in a way. The vibrations you send out is usually the vibrations you get back. And I know that makes me sound like a kook, but I do think that does kind of come back to your self-worth. I'm worthy of having the figure I want because I work out. I'm worthy of feeling strong. I'm worthy of change. So I think going inwards and allowing yourself in a way to bring in the abundance that's out there. The second part is, who are you keeping? What kind of community are you keeping around you? So do you have like 100 hype girls that you could call and say, oh my God, I absolutely crushed this presentation, or oh my God, I met the hottest guy in the bar the other night. Are those people cheering you on? Are they saying to you, oh my God, that's amazing. Like, when are you seeing him? What's next in the plan? I think you need to know what kind of relationships you have in your corner. Are you in a great relationship in a romantic way? I think you need to look at your environment and your community. And then I do think it comes down to the fundamentals of life. You know, you've got to make sure that you're getting enough sleep, that you're training your mind to think, you know what, I did so well today. I'm really proud of myself that I ate really well, or I'm so proud I got to the gym 3 times this week, or I'm so proud I got 15 minutes to myself. You have to almost welcome what it is that's out there. So I think those are little fragments, in my opinion. I think if you change your mindset, you'll be so amazed what actually happens. Your inner voice is the one that dictates your life. If you are saying, oh God, I'm stuck in this traffic. Of course I'm fighting with my boyfriend. Of course I'm not getting promoted and everyone else is. Or, you know, I think if you look at it in a negative light, that's the kind of thing that comes back to you and it kind of festers.
Yes.
I don't know.
I agree.
Does that make yourself a kook? I don't know.
No, not at all. I co-sign all of that. I think that your self-talk is really important. Your community. I mean, there's that famous saying that we become the average of the five people, that we spend the most amount of time with. Looking to your community, and that's the people in real life, but it's the people you consume in your ears via podcasts like this one. It's the people that you follow on social media. It's the books you read. It's everything. So doing a bit of a quick audit, who's in your corner? Are people lifting you up, or are you surrounded by a whole bunch of like negative Nancys? I think considering your relationship with self-worth, and do you feel worthy of good things? I would also add to that in saying, I think self-esteem is intrinsically linked with self-efficacy, and self-efficacy is your belief that you can do things. It's your belief that you will keep your word to yourself. So I would perhaps encourage this listener to get curious about where in their life are they keeping their word to themselves. I would also encourage you to think about, what does self-esteem, what does self-confidence, what does self-efficacy mean for you? And what is the gap from where you are now to where you want to be? Such as you might go, you know what, if I had better self-esteem, I would put myself out there. I would go for that promotion. I would get on dating apps. I would get on Bumble BFF and make a new girlfriend. You know, I would tackle becoming a mother on my own. If I had that self-esteem, then look at where you are now and what are the steps that you would take to get to that version of you, and how can you make those steps micro steps? So maybe it's, okay, I believe that if I had great self-esteem, I would go for that promotion. But what are the steps that you need to get there? Maybe you need to do some upskilling. Maybe you need to actually start raising your hand at staff meetings. Maybe you need to pull your manager aside and have a conversation with them and ask for tangible steps. Like, rather than just going, oh, I'm lacking self-esteem, get curious and get proactive. And I would also encourage you to turn your focus, and as Rach said, your internal dialogue dictates your reality. But I would encourage you to start noticing the things that you do well and lean into self-affirmations, because, you know, we all have heard of affirmations where people stand in the mirror and they're like, I'm powerful, I'm great, I'm beautiful. But there's evidence now to support the fact that if you were to stand in front of a mirror and actually repeat a self-affirming statement, it's going to be more powerful. Because if you're just saying an affirmation like, I'm powerful, but inside you don't believe it, it's not going to cause you any damage, but it might not have a very positive impact because you just don't believe it. And saying the words without believing the words, it's not going to do anything. But if you say words that you believe, so a self-affirming statement could be like, I'm really kind because last week at work, when Sarah was struggling, I went into her cubicle and I gave her a big hug. You know, it's connecting to something that you've done. Or at the end of the day, rather than getting into bed and going through the 20 things that you didn't do well, like the missed text message or the laundry that you forgot to hang out or the school note that you forgot to send in, start going through the things you did well. You know, I got to work on time. I got the kids bathed. I got dinner on the table. Like, I think actually redirecting your attention towards the things that you're doing well will also help to bolster that sensation of self-esteem and self-efficacy.
I think also like putting into like work and like community in a way. I'm going to use promotion as the best option, but as my example, I mean, I think if that's what your goal is, so I think also important to write down, where do you want to be in 18 months from now? And then, so from today's date, where do you want to be 18 months from now? And then go backwards and say, where was I 18 months ago? How far have I come? Like, am I in better relationships now? Is my workplace better? Are the people that I surround myself with better? Am I eating better? Am I sleeping more?
The growth.
Yeah. So I think reflection is an incredible thing. Hindsight's an even better. I wish we all had that. But I think you need to look at where you are, where you're standing right now, where you were 18 months ago. Was that where, if you wanted to be where you were 18 months ago, then that's your goal for the next 18 months. You need to look at it. Growth is a really big thing. Change is a great thing. I think you need to look at it from all angles, not just the negative. You've got to let, I did this today. I did this. I got all these amazing feedback from my boss. I absolutely crushed this. I've found a new girlfriend, a new mum friend that is just so on my level and she hypes me up all the time. I think you need to look at what's around you and what you've got going on. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's great advice. All right. What else? We've got a few more here, but maybe I'll choose. All right. Advice around pregnancy body image. I'm heavily pregnant and I'm struggling to accept my body. I realized that I identified too strongly with looking a certain way, and now being pregnant, my identity and self-worth has crumbled. I don't recognize my reflection and I feel lost about who I am.
Oh, I want to give her a big
hug.
Of
her. Yeah.
I actually just got like semi-emotional because I feel, you feel so raw when you're pregnant. Like you literally don't look like yourself. You know, if you got some really cool things, I got this really bad, they call it pregnancy mask. It's like, I
so
glow's, the glow's total BS, if I'm honest. And the people that get the glow are supermodels that have literally turned their throat on social media. But it's such a raw and vulnerable time. You can't see your toes. You can look in the mirror and it literally looks like a different person. So I can completely resonate with that. And then throw in hormones, then throw in morning sickness if you were a sucker for that. It's so turbulent. It's such a raw time. It's such a vulnerable time. And you can't explain it until you've been in that exact situation. You can't explain how and everything hurts. You can't sleep. You can't exercise the way you want to. You can't eat some of the things you love. It's just such a rubbish time. And then throw in the clothes. The maternity wear is, I can assure you, I found no nice maternity wear. The jeans, as fun as they are, with the little bump thing, they're ugly. They are.
I think you can't
even build yourself up with like clothes or with shoes because they don't fit, or you know, it's just you can't get comfortable in yourself because it's just your body changes literally every day.
Yeah. I think too there can be a bit of a pregnancy myth that so many of us expect to take part in, and for the lucky few, it is a time where you embrace every change in your body and you're glowing and you are just the picture of the mother goddess and it's amazing. Your hair grows, your skin glows, you feel so, so good about all of the new lumps and bumps. Like I think that we all kind of hope for that experience,
yes,
but it's not always that way. And I think it's important that we have conversations surrounding the challenges of your body feeling like it is completely out of your control.
Yes.
Because it is. It yep. is. All of a sudden, it's like you've just signed over the authority to your body, and all of a sudden, maybe you can't eat the things that you wanted to eat. Maybe you are sick nonstop. Maybe you just really hate the way that pregnancy actually feels. I can understand that for some women, the feeling of something in their something, the feeling of their baby in their stomach, in their womb, can actually be a really unsettling experience. But I think in this instance, for this lady who is saying, you know, that she has noticed that her identity and her self-worth has crumbled because it was so closely tied to how she looks. So she obviously puts so much value in how she looks. And I bet you any money that comes from childhood, I bet you any money one of her parents praised the shit out of her for being small, being slim, or it was the opposite and she worked really hard to get to a point where she fit the beauty standards. And then society rewards that as well. thin privilege is a real thing. Fat phobia is a real thing. It's a very troubling thing to recognize, oh my God, my identity and my self-worth is built into the control I have over my body. And to feel like you are crumbling, that's a very real thing for a lot of pregnant people.
And you know, if you want to, okay, an example, like, you know, this person clearly does put a lot of value in that, and it's a normal thing to think that, because that's what we've always been told. You're praised if you're all of those things, all of the things that you just mentioned, but you literally don't have any control. So if you wake up tomorrow and you're like, oh, I really don't like where I'm at in my mind, not being pregnant, I really want to get fit. I'm going to sign up to this gym and I'm going to do an 8-week boot camp and I'm literally going to sweat until I vomit. You can't do that when you're pregnant. You know what I mean? You can't exert yourself to that kind of level. She may not even be able to keep food down. Like, you can't, you literally have no control of it. And
you lose agency. Yeah.
I wish I could give you a cuddle, because I can hear it's such a, the raw.
It's a raw time.
It's so hard.
But what I would,
I want to give you some hindsight. I mean, I loved my first pregnancy. I loved it. I loved everything about it, but it was the season I was in. You know, I went through pregnancy. I was at my most pregnant in the middle of summer, my favorite season. I love wearing long, flowy dresses. That's my vibe. So I felt more at ease in that time in my life. My second pregnancy, I was my heaviest during winter, a season I literally hate. And I hated getting out of bed. I didn't want to work out. I didn't want to do that. So I felt like I had no control of it. But I just want to say to this person, hindsight is an incredible thing. When you meet your bubs, and when they, as they grow, you literally will thank your body for what they've brought. Like, they're just, I want to say that right now you're feeling it because hashtag hormones are crazy. I think you just need to know that a year from now, your body might still be different. It might have changed. It might have little marks where it didn't before, but you will be so much more grateful for your body when you see what's at the end. I'm sure listeners that understand this and have had kids or, you know, are in their postpartum journey or potentially that's been left in the dust, they will understand what I'm trying to sort of articulate. But a year from now, when that bub is walking around, talking, giving you sloppy, delicious kisses, you will thank your body for what it's been able to do, what it's been able to produce, this perfect little person. For right now, I understand how you feel, because it's just, you have to take your hands off the wheel and hope for the best. But I promise you what's coming, the prize at the end, you will look back on it and be able to reflect, hopefully in a really good way, to say, oh my God, look what my body was able to do. I was able to carry my body full term and do, you know, celebrate your body.
How you're feeling now isn't How you're feeling now isn't necessarily a permanent state. It's temporary. Yes. And perhaps you will get to that point a year into motherhood where you're feeling so much more appreciative. But I would also say, like, what a wonderful thing that part of your identity is crumbling now, because what an opportunity to build your identity around some things that are actually within your control and are going to be things that you can lean on regardless of the stage or season in life. Because I hate to tell you, if you have your identity steeped in how you look, aging is going to fuck you up. So this is...
Preach.
Yeah, and like, so this is a beautiful opportunity for you to go, holy shit, I'm crumbling. I don't know who I am. I put so much value in my body. This is your invitation right now to change that. Because you're going to have to change it at some point, or you're going to be miserable, and you don't want to lead a miserable life, and you don't want to raise a child that puts their value in their body, because heaven forbid they're not fully able. You know, you might have a disabled child, you might become disabled yourself, you know, aging, all of these things, our bodies, our looks change. Eventually you will get to an age where you begin to feel invisible. You know, people aren't commenting on your body, you're not praised for it. So you have to, like, you've got to get in touch with your values and your other attributes. And I promise you that you have them. You have so much more to offer the world than how you look. You have so much more to offer the world than the shape of your body, and so much more to offer your child than a parent who thinks and feels like that. And it's not your fault. It's not your fault that you feel like it's crumbling, but this is your opportunity. This is your responsibility to go, whoa, I feel like everything right now has come undone, but I'm going to pick up a thread and I'm going to weave some new beliefs. Yes. And I'm going to set myself up for success and realize that my body is a vessel. It is not something to be forced into a small size, or something that should be praised, or something that, you know, I should force to look the way that society wants it to look. This is my vessel for life. And this is the vessel that allows me to be thoughtful, to be curious, to be kind, to be a loving partner, to be a loving daughter, whatever it is. Like, just lean on some other parts of your identity. And if you're struggling, like if you don't know what those parts are, get our program, The Blueprint, because it will take you through how to choose your values, how to find your 3 to 5 words. It will take you through the importance of building out your identity. You know, I speak about it in The Blueprint. I say, if you have one leg of your identity and it's how you look, when it gets knocked out, that tabletop falls. But if you imagine a tabletop and it has 16 legs, right? And sure, one of those legs might be how you look, but when it gets knocked out, you've still got other 15 legs, which might be relational identity. It might be the things that you're passionate about, your self-efficacy, the things you do well, your belief system, your network, your friends. We need to get more legs in the identity table, so that when something happens in life, when something changes, you don't completely fall apart. So grab yourself a copy of The Blueprint, because it will really support you on that journey.
Yep. And I just hang in there, Mama. It is.
Be compassionate to yourself. Yeah. Oh,
just give yourself time. And best piece of advice is literally delete Instagram and TikTok and everything, and Facebook.
Yes, make your world smaller.
Delete, yeah. Like, let follow people that build you up, because there's no point following Gigi Hadid and watching her pregnancy story if you're pregnant at the same time. You don't want that. You don't need that energy in your life. You
just, is that a personal trigger, right?
Yeah. I don't want to talk about it. You know, just let your, it's, for right now, this is the season you're in. You're about to bring something so incredible into the world, and that should be celebrated. But I can understand why you're feeling the way you can, but just make your world smaller, bring in people, be kind to yourself, and realize, I promise you, in a year's time, you will realize how strong you actually are as a person, as a mother, as a daughter, as a friend. Because motherhood changes you, and it changes you for the better. And it's in my opinion.
And also, I mean, yes, great. I love, love, love that advice. But also, don't be afraid to get a therapist and do the work. Because parenting is a growth journey. Parenting is triggering. You don't want to pass these beliefs onto your beautiful, innocent child. So do the work. And this is a wake-up call. This is your chance. Get a therapist. Dig deep. Maybe play back the last 10 minutes and re-listen to this as well, because there might be something that you have missed. But there are a couple of questions we didn't get to. So we're going to have to do another episode, because I said to Rach, we'll make it half an hour. We'll make it speedy. And she said, let's make it 45. And we're now...
It's, you know, 50. You just get into it. I feel like people are just pouring their drinks and I mean, I could go, I love these kinds of questions, because I feel like they're just, it's like I feel such a good girl vibe from it. And I just want to answer all of them.
Well, we've got some questions about falling in love. with married men. Oof. We've got some other juicy questions as well. So we will have to schedule another podcast. But in the meantime, my love, thank you so much for your time tonight. It's always a joy to see you. Give the gals a kiss for me in the morning.
Yeah, I've got a date with Netflix.
She's got to go watch a serial killer doco. We also started Killer Sally.
Oh, okay, writing this down. Because I think I need to get back on board with the. I'm going to go back into the podcast, the crime podcast. Now that you've mentioned it. All right, Killer Sally. I'm adding
Killer Sally is a Netflix one, okay. And it's like this bodybuilding couple.
Oh,
and there's a bit of Roid Rage. Of course.
In Rachel's recommendations. Yeah. Mine is so dark. It's literally serial killers and then like Coco Melon, if I've forgotten to flick the channels between the two. So Coco Melon Wiggles and
one extreme to the other.
Yeah. I look like it's
real head case.
I look very unhinged if you look through my recommendation in my list.
I think we all do.
History. I wouldn't let a first date see it. I wouldn't.
Oh, here's another one just while we're going. Do you have Disney Plus?
Yeah. I have children.
Of course. Okay. Yeah, I was going to say stupid question. We watch The Patient with Steve Carell. So basically, let me give you a quick synopsis and I won't spoil it for any listeners. It's slow moving, but they're short episodes and I love Steve Carell, but he is kidnapped by a patient of his who is a serial killer and the serial killer wants to get better. So he kidnaps Steve Carell so that he can live in therapy.
Is it true? Like, is it based on real life?
God, I hope not. I hope not.
The moment it says based on true events, I've added it to my list. I freaking love anything like that.
Well, Brendan has just made me. Brendan has just, I'm going to go made me sit through the Conjuring films and he's like, they're based on true events.
Nope.
They're not as scary. Like they're not, like I almost find them like slightly comical. Like they're like, have you seen any of them?
Nope. No.
It's not as bad as I thought.
No. Okay. This is so embarrassing.
Look at us. We're going to wrap it up. Hang on.
I watched the years ago, so I haven't watched it since because I've been too scared. Now I'm trying to think of it. The Blair Witch Project, that literally terrified me.
I remember seeing that with, I was going to say his name. I don't know if you know him. He went to our high school. It rhymes with Schmant Schmipke. I went on a date with him in high school and we saw the Blair Witch Project and with Mamish Meng.
What a rubbish first date though. I mean, no wonder he's not in the scene anymore. Oh my God. That's so funny. There was another one. There was another, paranormal activity where it's like a dash. It looks like a dash.
I haven't seen that.
Can't watch it. It seems too real to me. And most of my friends, anyone that's watched it, will probably be laughing at me thinking how ridiculous it is that I get scared by that. But I can literally sit through like a 12 doco series about someone that actually murdered people. I can't sit through like fake scary.
It's too scary. It's so interesting. Like I think it's that combination of like the music, the anticipation, the pop-outs, all of that stuff. But this house that we live in, which you guys really need to come down for a barbecue, but this house that we live in, the lights always...
Stop it.
The lights always flicker and Brendan reckons he sees things in the reflections.
Oh, my God. I've got goosebumps.
We always say it's his mum because he'll talk to her and we'll be like, oh, Narelle, did it. Or if Brendan says something cheeky, like the lights flicker and he's like, fuck off, mum. Like we always say it's his mum. But, yeah, he's like, I see things in the reflection because there's so much glass here. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. Like, that's cool. But he's just started, like, going back to team sports where he's out for, like, hours at a time. Like, he's out tonight. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is actually creepy when the lights flicker and he's not here.
Should we turn this into, like, a 7-hour series so that I can stay with you?
Should we do, like, a ghost stories podcast? We should.
Oh my God. There probably is a market for that because maybe I have a couple in the bank. Well,
we'll wrap it up because it's 20 to 10.
Decide if they want us to keep rambling.
All right. What I will do is, we'll maybe we can put up a story on Instagram and invite people to share their
experiences,
and then we can read it out and share. Okay. But like I said, it's nearly 10 p.m. my time. You need to go get out of your gym clothes and see your lovely hubby.
I'm going to wipe off this Cervirax.
No, leave it. It's endearing. I like it. It's good. All right, my love. I will chat with you very soon. I'll stop the podcast now. So thank you for joining me.
Love you. Bye, everyone.
Love you.
This is what I want. This is what I need. If you don't have to go, I can set you free. Are you gonna make a move? Are you gonna come and see? Whatever you wanna do, you know it's cool with me. Whisper in the dark. Whispers in the dark. You come to play, don't you? Looking for something new. I got a lot underneath, tricks up my sleeve.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.